You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll check back in with a union leader to hear how muni operators are doing now more than a year into the coronavirus pandemic.
If you have one bad passenger that is refusing to wear his or her mask, and then you have five or six passengers that are pretty much saying, hey, bad passenger, get off of the bus or stop bullying the operator, you know, wear your mask or we will throw you out. That right there is probably one of the best ways of intervention. And usually when that happens, when you have a couple of good passengers versus one bad passenger, the bad passenger usually ends up acquiescing to the good passengers.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. Before we get started, at the Public Press, which is Civic's parent organization, we've been working really hard during this pandemic to pursue angles we're not seeing much coverage of elsewhere, or to take a more systemic look at the issues that are surfacing in the headlines. The San Francisco Public Press is a nonprofit, and we're inspired by the public radio model. That's the idea that people who are able to support the work that we do so everyone can have access to it without paywalls or ads. If you think we're onto something, we'd very much appreciate if you could show your support. You can do that by going to sfpublicpress.org/donate or by helping us get the word out about this show. Subscribe on whichever podcast platform you use or leave us a review. It really does help. So thanks. The last time we spoke with Roger Marenco, president of the Transport Workers Union Local 250A, he told us about how worried muni operators were about the virus spreading on public transportation. It's been about a year since then, and as I learned from this conversation, many muni operators have caught the virus, despite the safety precautions everyone's being asked to take. And muni is struggling. Ridership and revenue are way down. We talked about how operators are dealing with this and what he would like to see change now that vaccines are available and the city moves toward reopening. Well, thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you.
I am not sure what the latest numbers on cases are among muni staff and operators, so I'm hoping, could you give a sense of how operators are doing in terms of infections and also in terms of their emotional and mental health as frontline workers more than a year into the pandemic?
Unfortunately, we've had two operators pass away from symptoms due to COVID-19. There have been several hundred that have been hospitalized and or treated for COVID-19 related symptoms. Luckily, we've only had two members pass away. Given the size of the SFMTA family and TWU Local 250A membership, that is still relatively low in terms of exposures and members passing away. So we're grateful for that. However, unfortunately, like I stated, you know, we have had two members pass away from COVID-19 symptoms. In terms of the psychological and mental effect that it's taking on our membership, it's extremely difficult because prior to COVID-19, you know, operators were faced with assaults, harassment, bullying, threats, intimidation, physical assaults, and now it's even more difficult to deal with these times because of the COVID-19, of course. You know, operators try to enforce the mask compliance when passengers board the buses, and oftentimes the operator is greeted with negativity. And so we rely on the general public to try and help us out to the best of their abilities whenever safe and whenever possible in terms of mask compliance. But it is and has been a psychological downward spiral for our membership, just in terms of coming to work every single day. You know, the operators are exposed to hundreds and hundreds of people on a daily basis. It's completely different work from that of a police officer or a firefighter, given the fact that they don't deal with this high number of passengers, this high number of people on a daily basis, and hence the reason why our operators are much more heavily exposed to the potential of contracting COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that you brought up masks because, you know, there is, of course, a mask mandate on muni, but a number of incidents across the country and here have made it really clear that it can be risky to try and get someone to wear a mask who isn't. Can you talk more about the experiences of operators with that and who else is responsible for enforcement of this mask mandate?
Well, in terms of who is ultimately responsible, I don't want to play the blame game, because then it always turns into he said, she said, this person, that person, this agency, that entity, you know, so I'm not going to get into that. At the end of the day, unfortunately, it always falls on the operator, period. It just always does, unfortunately, because that's person that is interacting with the passenger. That's the person that is interacting with the general public. And that's the person that's trying to deal with the issue of mask compliance. So it always, unfortunately, falls on the operator. And it is he or she that ends up putting their life, their health, their safety in jeopardy by simply trying to ask people to, you know, become compliant when it comes to wearing masks. And that right there has, like I stated earlier, taken a huge toll on our membership. It's caused some of our members, you know, to not want to come to work in fear, for fear of their safety, also for fear of contracting the virus and then, you know, ultimately going home and passing that along to their loved ones, to their family, etc. So that's kind of what we have to deal with on a daily basis. Hence the reason why we rely on the public to try to help us out whenever possible, whenever safe to do so.
In what ways can the public help you out besides wearing a mask and keeping social distance on the buses?
One of the ways that the public can help out is by simply interacting or interjecting whenever a non-compliant passenger is trying to argue or get combative or get confrontational with the operator. Mm-hmm. If you have one bad passenger that is refusing to wear his or her mask, and then you have five or six passengers that are pretty much saying, hey, bad passenger, get off of the bus or stop bullying the operator, you know, wear your mask or we will throw you out. That right there is probably one of the best ways of intervention. And usually when that happens, when you have a couple of good passengers versus one bad passenger, the bad passenger usually ends up acquiescing to the good passengers. So I'd say that that's one of the ways. Another way also is when the passengers are able to take out their cell phones and start recording the situation at hand. That oftentimes helps.
Are you speaking from experience here? Has this happened to you?
Yes, it has. It has indeed. And when the public has helped me out, that is a huge weight that is lifted off of your shoulders, because it's extremely scary being placed in that situation.
Yeah.
And knowing that you have some people backing you up is absolutely helpful.
Well, speaking of other scary situations, there has been awful news recently about incidents of anti-Asian hate, and that is not an unfamiliar phenomenon to Muni operators, which we've talked about before. How are Asian American operators doing right now?
Wow. With everything that we've been seeing in the papers, on the radio, and the news, and it's absolutely scary. And we did have a couple of Asian operators who were assaulted last year, and moving into this year with all of the increased violence that is occurring amongst the Asian community, our operators are even more fearful because of everything that they're seeing. And this is one of the reasons why we encourage everyone to use their shield, their barrier shield that they have on their buses or on their trains or on their historic streetcars. It goes beyond just Asians. Unfortunately, they are the ones that are, you know, seeing the brunt of this racially motivated assault on them. But even still, we ask everyone to try to be as safe as possible.
It's a difficult time, but there is one development that is pretty major, and that is the availability of the vaccine. And I'm curious to know what your personal reaction was to the news that operators are now eligible for the coronavirus vaccine. And how did other operators react? What was the response when the news came out?
So I think the response was pretty ubiquitous in terms of a sigh of relief. In terms of saying, finally, we were taken out of the line. We were placed at the back of the line. Then we were taken out of the line completely. And now we're back in the line. So that was indeed a sigh of relief. Just finally, you know, we deserve to be there. We're not saying, you know, push aside anybody else. We're just saying, put us back in line. That's all we're saying. We're not saying we're better, you know, than the firefighters or police or doctors and nurses or teachers. We're not saying that. We're just saying, put us back in line. And now that they have put us back in line, it's a sigh of relief. So finally.
Yeah. What was that like to sort of have this roller coaster, this back and forth decisions?
It is. And it's extremely sad that, you know, someone in government or some people in government, you know, have the audacity to even try to place a hierarchy in terms of who's more worthy of a vaccine, especially when someone was already in line. You know, that's 100% what I just define as straight politics right there. Pandering to certain people, certain groups, certain crowds, and that was not cool.
What have operators' experiences been trying to actually access the vaccine?
It was difficult up until recently, I'd say maybe a couple of weeks ago. I'd say maybe even this month, actually, March, in terms of getting the vaccine. They were being shunned. They were being pushed away. They were saying, come back tomorrow, or whatever other reason or excuse they were given. And it was just really, really difficult. You know, we were just being kicked around left and right, you know, from one place to another, from one person to another, given one excuse to another. And it just wasn't cool. Wasn't fun.
What changed?
I think the amount of help that we were getting from the San Francisco Labor Council, from other unions, and from labor leaders, you know, sticking up and standing out, you know, fighting for the union membership. I think that's pretty much what helped, the political pressure that we were building.
Mm-hmm. Going back to last year a bit, you had called at the time for a number of infection controls and safety measures, including the suspension of fare collection, requiring passengers to enter through rear doors away from operators, and imposing a limit on the number of passengers per vehicle for social distancing. And when we talked, some but not all of those precautions had been implemented, but buses were still too crowded to allow for real social distancing. Well, now the SFMTA's data dashboards indicate, to me anyway, that ridership is actually down this year, even compared to last year when we were already in a pandemic and ridership was already dramatically down. With all that in mind, what infection controls do you think are still necessary to add, or what should we change from where we're at?
I think what needs to be added is absolutely, without doubt, more vehicles, more lines, more routes. What do I mean by that? Our trains had been sitting for almost a year in the yard, just parked. And that right there was absolutely detrimental, because the less vehicles, the less public transportation you have out there, the more crowding you have on the buses, the more overcrowding occurs on a daily basis. So what needs to happen is all of the trains, the light rail vehicles, the LRVs, need to come back into service immediately, number one. Number two, the PCCs, which are the historic streetcars that run up and down Market Street that provide service to Fisherman's Wharf, all of the piers, and the Embarcadero, that also, that mode of transportation has to return. Keep in mind that trains are bigger than buses, and they create more spacing, more social distancing, more safe rides for not just the operator, but for the general public as well. So I would say that that indeed is a must in terms of bringing back the train service immediately, bringing back the LRVs, which are the light rail vehicles, and the PCCs, which are the streetcars.
I'm speaking with Roger Marenko, president of TWU Local 250A, about how Muni workers are faring more than a year into the coronavirus pandemic. I mean, it sounds like we're not going to be back up to full Muni service for a very long time. It's unlikely that full service will be restored even by early next year, 2022. And Muni has more than 800 job vacancies, and that includes operators. How do you square that? I mean, how big a problem is being short-staffed like this for operators, and what can be done to bring service back?
Well, It's indeed difficult, what you stated. You know, the agency has not been up to 100% capacity in terms of providing the general public with service. It has not been on par with, you know, 100% of service for a very, very long time. I don't know if in this lifetime they will ever get there due to all of the difficulties and complications that occur here in Muni. It's really, really difficult. Now, what can be done is, I would say, for example, just this month, we were able to work with the Civil Service Commission in terms of extending the hiring lists that were going to be expiring this year. So extending those lists so that the agency still has a pool from which they can gather more potential new hires. So we were able to extend those lists for about half a year. That's one of the things that we did. You know, one of the things, what else can be done? I'm not really sure what else can be done. You cannot really entice people to come drive a bus at this moment in this time because of the COVID-19 emergency. You know, a lot of people, some people are quitting. Some people might have been offered this job as an operator and they're saying, thank you, but no, thank you. Maybe post-pandemic, yes. Maybe even pre-pandemic, I would have taken the job. But during the emergency, no. Thank you, but no thanks. It's not worth it for me. So I'm not really sure how else to compel more people to apply for this job. It's scary.
Is this sort of a chicken and egg problem? Like, you want to restore full Muni service, but you need the operators and you can't get the operators because there isn't money to restore full Muni service?
I would say yes. I would say yes. The operators that we do have here on site, on hand, they are ready, willing, and able to go back to their vehicles, to their buses, their trains, their cable cars, their streetcars, and start operating those vehicles. They are ready, willing, and able to. They've been under this sort of what I call house arrest of not driving their vehicles for about a year now. You know, the cable cars have not gone out. The streetcars have not gone out. They are ready, willing, and able to get back on those vehicles and start operating in service. And I believe that that right there might even be sort of a catalyst for the City and County of San Francisco Public Ridership in terms of letting them know that, hey, we are getting back to some type of normalcy. Hey, things are looking better. Hey, things are getting better. Hey, you know, you don't have to be as nervous, as worried, as scared, afraid. You know, come on back and, you know, come on back in a safe manner, you know, because we have to get back to some type of normalcy, especially now that the vaccines are being distributed throughout the city.
Yeah, that's another aspect of this problem, right? I mean, what's your sense of how willing people are to come back to Muni right now when service is not fully restored? I mean, one thing that the transit riders groups have said is, well, you know, it's hard to want to come back when my bus line isn't running or when the Muni line that I used to take just doesn't exist right now.
Right. And so that right there is one of the reasons why we, when I say we, I mean TWU Local 250A, the union, we have pushed and pressed the agency to bring back all of the lines as quickly as possible, even if it's at half capacity. Why? Because one line might be extremely important for me, and it might be have zero of importance for you. But all in all of these lines are important in some way, shape, or form to somebody or to some groups of people in terms of getting from point A to point B. So there is no such thing as a quote bad line or a line that is not needed. There are lines that are, I guess, somewhat more dangerous, somewhat safer. That is a given. But there's no line that I think is less important than another one, because you're never going to compel, you know, a little old couple in their 80s who are going shopping that the 14 is not that important of a line if they use it, you know, two or three times a week. So you can never make that argument, because to that couple, that might be their lifeline because they've used it day after day, year after year, decade after decade. They've relied on it. They've depended on it. And it's become part of their life. So in terms of which line is more important, I can't answer that, because they are all important to someone in some way, shape, or form. Hence the reason why we are constantly pushing the agency to bring back all of the lines to some capacity, even if it's at half capacity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does it say anything to you that ridership is down even compared to this time last year? I mean, looking at the trends, it seems to me like probably ridership is going to be up compared to later in the year. Like by, you know, April, May will be at a higher ridership number than we were in April or May of 2020. But for now, does that indicate anything to you that it's actually lower than it was last year?
It's scary. It's scary indeed. And, you know, that makes me wonder what's going on here. Is it because people are using their personal vehicles? Is it because they are using Uber? Is it because they are using Lyft? Is it because they're just staying home and not doing anything at all? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but it is indeed scary because our biggest point is to safely get back to some type of normalcy in terms of the amount of passengers that we were transporting pre-pandemic levels. And I am optimistic that in the summer, May, I'd say June, July, we're going to increase those numbers because many more people will have been vaccinated by that time. And I'm hoping that tourism will start to increase once again because San Francisco is indeed a tourist city. So I'm looking forward to safely returning back to some type of normalcy in the summer of this year.
Yeah. Yeah. And I should also check myself and note there that actually the lockdown didn't start until partway through March last year. So maybe that's a factor as well. But I want to look at another insight from those data dashboards from the SFMTA, which is revenue has totally crashed. And last year, the Board of Supervisors and the SFMTA had a somewhat drawn out dispute about fare hikes and then reached an agreement that would prevent fare hikes for the next two fiscal years. Your union came out against fare hikes too. Can you talk a bit about why?
Well, we just felt that during a declared emergency, increasing fares would just be another deterrent for the general public. And while we were trying to bring more ridership to public transportation usage, that right there was just one step backwards. And we're trying to move forward. Hence the reason why we were against the notion of raising fares during the declared emergency. However, on the flip side, we completely know and understand that the agency does, need to increase their sources of revenue. We completely know and understand that. And now that we have come along maybe 10 months later, now might be the time to start thinking about that. However, before that is even a conversation, we have to bring people back on board in terms of using public transportation. We have to let them know that Muni is safe, Muni is clean, Muni is reliable, Muni is dependent before we start talking about raising the fares on the passengers. I get both sides. It's just at the time, it was not feasible. Now it might be feasible in terms of talking about it, not implementing it. First, we have to get the ridership back.
Although fares are such a small portion of the SFMTA budget, I mean, it seems to me like even if you increase those, if they're only, 20% of the budget right now, how much can you really help the agency by raising fares a little bit?
Well, I like to think of it as it help all these little gestures end up helping in some way, shape, or form. So if that only helps 5%, okay, then that's 5%. One of the things that I was also talking about last year is anybody and everybody who makes more than $150,000 per year, take a mandatory 10% pay reduction for the next 12 months.
In the agency?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Would that have solved the agency's problem? No, it wouldn't. It simply would have added another percentage in terms of, hey, we were able to save this amount of money. That's all it would have done. All of these small percentages end up adding up in the long run. Is that going to fix the entire problem? No, it's not. But you cannot fix Muni with one solution. Mm-hmm. It's a plethora of smaller solutions that end up making the difference. So raising fares is one solution. everybody making over $150,000, taking a 10% reduction in pay for 12 months. That's another solution that can help out. Increasing the parking citations. That's another percentage, you know, that the agency can save in terms of money or generating extra sources of revenue, whatever the case may be. It's all these smaller options that are going to end up making a difference, you know. But one individual solution is not the solution. It never has been. It never will be, I don't think.
I remember you calling for that pay cut, and I'm wondering if any operators make more than that and would have been affected, and if anybody had feelings about that.
There are no 9163 transit operators that make $150,000 or more. Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. Well, then let me just ask you, kind of looking ahead, you've been talking about, you know, looking forward to having more ridership back, maybe even getting tourism back and how that might help. What are your hopes for the immediate future, let's say for this year, in terms of Muni's recovery and San Francisco's recovery?
Wow. In terms of this year? Well, I'd say some of our primary goals is, first and foremost, bringing back the light rail vehicles, mm-hmm. all of the lines. Second, bringing back the street cars, the PCCs, the historic street cars that run up and down the streets, because they've been out of commission for 1 year. Next, I would say absolutely bringing back the iconic cable cars. The street cars and the cable cars are symbols of the city and county of San Francisco. It's kind of like Alcatraz or Lombard Street, the Painted Ladies, Golden Gate Bridge. All of those elements, all of those icons fall in the same realm of the cable cars and the street cars. Because number one, when it comes to street cars, not that many cities on the planet have street cars. Mm-hmm. You know, we are definitely the city that I think actually has the most. In terms of cable cars, there is no other country on the planet that has these vehicles. The oldest mode of mechanized public transportation in the world. And we still have that here. So those are icons. Those are relics. Those are vintage, classic, historical modes of transportation that cannot be lost due to an emergency or due to politics or due to government. And we were in fear that those vehicles might be lost, that they might become extinct during this pandemic. Luckily, we were able to pressure the agency to ensure that those vehicles did not become extinct, because once those vehicles become extinct, they're gone.
Well, anything else that I didn't give you a chance to say that you specifically wanted to talk about?
I guess, once again, I would just ask the general public that if you ever happen to see an operator in need of help, in need of assistance, please do your best, whenever safe to do so, to assist the operator in whatever way, shape, or form you can, whether that's, you know, trying to de-escalate the situation with a problem passenger or calling the police for assistance, or even recording with your cell phone. So if possible, whenever safe to do so, please help out the operator, because it is a very stressful and oftentimes thankless job.
That was Roger Marenko, president of the Transport Workers Union Local 250A. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic. Civic is produced at KSFP LP 102.5 FM in San Francisco. Our theme music is by John Dillon. Our team includes producer and contributor Mel Baker and assistant producer Liana Wilcox. KSFP is a project of the San Francisco Public Press, a nonprofit investigative newsroom. Find our reporting at sfpublicpress.org. Thanks for listening.